This episode of The Stack was first broadcast on the 22nd of December 2012 on Monocle 24. The Stack is brought to you in association with J.Crew.
A gentleman in charge of keeping things tight and sharp, a woman with a talent for keeping things beautiful while staying on budget, the man in charge of keeping Monocle on track, and a couple of other family members on this Christmassy 17th edition of The Stack. Also on today's programme, we'll hear what magazines people would like to receive subscriptions to over the year ahead.
The magazine that I've chosen for my annual subscription is something called We Are Here, which is a new publication. And the first issue is all about Dubai, and I like that it just sort of takes one destination and just focuses on that. And it's really beautiful looking, really sort of high quality paper and really clear typography. It's just a nice thing.
And we'll also walk through the Sugar Plum newsstand of one editor's dreams.
So back to this story about commerce and logistics. The newsstand would be healthier if governed less by statistics. In kiosks and bookstores, from London to Seattle, fighting through chocolate bars is now half the battle. I don't want a Fanta, Smarties or a Coke. I'd like a bundle of magazines, please. So stop with this joke.
All that and a few more reading tips live from Studio One here at Midori House on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House, where we're just winding down our regular schedule while gearing up our special Christmas programming for the coming weeks. Today, we thought we'd keep it in the family and talk to our own collaborators and editors about their editorial highlights of 2012, how they see the business changing, and also what their editorial and art direction resolutions are for 2012. So let's start by seeing who we can tempt into the studio with our very special Christmas brew. And we managed to coax a couple of very familiar voices down from the first floor. Almost on this last day of production, we're sort of in production. Anyway, I think you will be very familiar, listeners, with the voice of Richard Spencer Powell. I also have our editor, Andrew Tuck, and also the cute anime tones of Poppy Shibamoto, our director of photography. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Sue. Hey, Rich. What up down there?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Guys, I thought we should start. Everyone has, you know, a load of magazines around the table. I can see that some of you have also brought not just current issues, but issues over the last year as well. But you know, we've been on air for what? I mean, I'm almost going on 4 months now with this program. Part of the reason that we set out to do this show was to really sort of capture the spirit of, you know, much of what's being discussed. But also, I think, trying to correct a lot of the chat that is out there. And Andrew, I wanted to start with you. If you look back over the last year, not just where our business is, but you're often talking to other editors as well. You're, of course, always looking at the numbers for this business, not just editorially, but where we sit, month in and month out with the newsstand. You know, looking back over the last 12 months, is it sort of as much of a crisis, as, you know, we should be led to believe about the newsstand? Or do you feel that your different markets are really working in different ways and at different speeds?
I think the real problem is that that becomes something that's very self-perpetuating. When any market believes that it's, you know, the game is up, then of course it's up. And I think what's been interesting for us is, you know, that we've done something very interesting with Monocle that's gone against that tide. We've invested in paper, we've believed in print. And I think there are other people doing that on a small scale too. But what's interesting is I think that many of the big publishers, you know, they seem to be run by the digital departments, and they still seem really unsure about where they're going in many instances. But I think that also what's interesting is that I think there is a separation between what's happening in newsprint and what's happening, for want of a better word, in the world of glossy magazines. Because there, I think that actually when it's come to the end of the year, I think many board directors of big publishing houses have actually been quite surprised that their sales have held up, and they've actually made some good money on paper. And then they've looked at what they've done in digital, and they can't help but feel actually, we have a giant department that's making, forcing us to turn out iPad versions of all of these magazines. But where is the capital flowing into, you know, into our bottom line? So I'm quietly confident that you know, there are huge problems. We know how badly the newsstand is run. But I'm quietly confident that often when I speak to people now, that everyone has a slightly different view of what's happening, which I think is healthy. Whereas 2 or 3 years ago, or even last year, it seemed that everybody was convinced, you know, iPad was the salvation. Moving to digital was inevitable for every brand. They were just kind of looking after the print edition until it vanished. And I think that while some people, especially in the US, still have that mindset, I think in Europe, actually, lots of magazine owners are thinking, hold on, it's, you know, it's a little bit like when a few days ago we had this kind of predicted Mayan end of the earth day and it didn't happen. I think that's happening in some boardrooms as well. I think people are thinking, hold on, we're still here. We've still got a good business.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, and Andrew raises a very interesting point. And we seem to come back to this, you know, this point, you know, off air as well. And I mean, Andrew, you made the point many times, like just when oftentimes we're approached by other media companies who want to do, you know, do things with us, you're like, God, these people have really not just painted themselves into a corner, but they've completely talked themselves out of the business. When you look at the newsstand at the moment, Rich, do you see titles which are sort of hesitant? They're kind of in the game, but they think, okay, we can still make the switch to digital. You know, or as Andrew's saying, do you think that a lot of people have realized, you know what, we're in this period of settle down right now. We should actually really look at our numbers. Let's have a real honest look at where the iPad is going, and maybe we should force a bit of a rethink for, yeah, what all of these, you know, these things do in front of us.
I think what Andrew mentioned about some of the bigger publishing houses, I think the problem there is that the sales were down, and I think they slightly fell out of love with print, which is the wrong thing to do if that's the, you know, where your business started. And I think perhaps some of the bigger glossy titles, particularly men's, they have looked to the internet for a lot of their content. A lot of it's free, a lot of it's based on, you know, film starlets or music that's out. So they've kind of let their guard down and stopped making original content, and they've stopped making original artwork. And for that reason, I think they've seen the transition onto an iPad or a device as a simple one. But they haven't thought really about the fact that their content was already on the internet. So their iPad edition is kind of nothing.
But what do you mean when they've stopped making original content? Are you just saying that they're lifting it from elsewhere? What is?
Well, I think, you know, the problem with men's mags is that it's always the latest film star that's coming out. And the problem is, you've already seen that film star, you've already seen the trailer, you've already read an interview with her online, and so the content is a little bit null and void by the time it gets to print. And they just haven't kind of rallied against that. So I think too many people have been sold on this idea that, you know, the iPad's a great device, but whoever said it was going to save print and whoever said print needed saving?
Right.
It doesn't. They're such completely separate things. And I think there are markets where people still do celebrate print, and it's a completely different emotional engagement when you actually pick up a lovely fresh bit of print design from Japan, from out of Berlin, than kind of sliding your fingers across a tablet. Mm. And I think the problem with tablets is that we've now got smartphones, bigger smartphones, half-size tablets and tablets. So we're just totally immersed in that. Actually, getting your hands on a bit of print is a complete break from the norm. So I think people just need to, the big publishers need just to remind themselves of that and remind themselves why they got in the game in the first place.
Poppy, I asked Andrew about whether you know, different markets are working at different speeds. All of us, we were all in Japan recently. Of course, you spent a lot of time working with Japanese photographers, you know, for our own magazine. Do you know, when you talk to, let's say, agents and photographers in Germany versus UK versus America versus Japan, are they indeed sort of all functioning in different ways? Do you think photographers all have a different sense of media, how they want to get paid, how they want to produce for you, and then also what the final result's going to look like when it hits a magazine or a screen?
Yeah, I think it's very different. I mean, lots of people in Germany and Japan, they would want to see the color proof, you know, like, because obviously they are used to working in their own country, you know, that they can't see that. They, in Japan, they still go to photographers and illustrators, they still go to the editorial office to check the V2s and check the proof and read it and check every lines. And that obviously working with us, they can't. So they have to just trust us. But that actually is a very nice thing that they want to do that. Mm. And then some others, obviously, they are more, you know, like especially working with people who are used to covering Arab Spring or something, is like, you know, it's more about getting it out there now. So the attitude is very different. But I think we've got different section magazine where we can do one, the speedy newsy report, and B, like sort of more slower and making every little detail looking perfect. So I think we can balance that and we can take both type of photographers. But yeah, it's different. Everywhere's very different.
I mean, not to deliberately take delight in the slow, but it was great when we were shooting our upcoming February cover, which has already gone to bed and will be on press very soon. But I was giving someone a tour of the building. We don't often shoot our covers here, but it just you know, it made it manageable, and because it was quite a contained cover, we could do it downstairs. But it was great actually just showing someone around, and there, you know, there we were shooting on film, and someone just said, you know, Why are you doing this? You know, when you're here and you could be looking at everything, of course, off of a Mac. And well, I mean, two things. And Rich, I'll come to you first, and then Poppy. Is it still important when you get that cover, Rich, and you look at that image, and there's you know, I guess we all know it took, you know, a good day plus because it's film still versus. Yeah, you know, you could have been much snappier had it been digital.
I think it does make a difference. I think you can tell in the quality at certain occasions. But I think the one thing for me, having worked with film in the past and having worked with digitally more recently, is that the thing when you shoot film is you get the full process. So you get to go, you know, you get to see all the Polaroids. You make the decisions on the Polaroids. It's a harder process. You have to really discuss it. You have to really talk about the light. It isn't just you see it on someone's laptop and they say, oh, we'll fix that in post-production. And then you get through all the contact sheets and you have to do a proper editing process. It takes a lot longer, but you get to see much more. It's a much more fuller, rounded, creative process. And I, for one, I love it. Sometimes it's quite slow if you're dealing with still life, but when it comes to portraiture and fashion, it's a bit slower, but it's just a bit more dynamic. It's a bit more exciting, you know, it's a bit more evocative. And in the recent case of our cover shoot with Henning Bock, kind of slightly old school German photographer, he's just got a total disregard for like the price of a Polaroid. I mean, he fires off 50, 60, 70 Polaroids just to get it right. And it's fantastic to see. And it's good to see some of the younger people we have here getting to learn that a little bit, because it really is starting to go in a big way when it comes to finding educated young people that understand all these processes.
Poppy, do you think there's an interest, though? Are there young photographers who think this is a craft they want to go back to? Or you know, last week we had the photographers, you know, Sebastian, you know, Meyer on here, and Sebastian was talking about, you know, the fact that everyone sort of thinks that they are photographers because they have an iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, like, photographers learning now, I think they only do film black and white in a school, and then they don't do it after. And it's really nice, like, it's also, like, really, really, really hard finding assistant who can assist a film photographer. So all that, I think they are still, like, you know, like even Anna in our office, she's like 22, 23, she's into film and she bought
much
a film
younger
camera.
Than you.
Yeah, I'm 22. Anyway, so younger people are into that, I think, but I think I hope they don't think it's just a cute little toy thing,
you
know, like they have to get it.
And just before
properly.
We go to break, Andrew, do you think there's a sense that it's a bit of hobbyism versus actually a craft and skill that you would apply, you know, within a professional workplace?
Well, I think there's definitely a generation of photographers who don't know, you know, how to use film. But I think that the ones who use it, they use it with real skill and they use it for a purpose. I don't think it's like, you know, taking out your box brownie. Mm. But I think what's interesting is that, again, it's often the smaller magazines that seem to be investing in quality rather than that kind of mid-market magazine that comes out. And I'm sure we'll talk about that later on. But that's where I think there's a real breakdown of quality where, you know, actually they're probably hardly using a photographer because they're buying in images, or they're just using images that have been supplied by other companies to fill their pages. But I think I don't think it's a risk of being a hobbyist. I just think that, you know, it will come a point where people realize that, you know, some magazines are thriving because they are investing in quality. Mm. And that will hopefully kind of tip things, look a bit back in our direction.
I like how you mentioned Box Brownie because, just a couple of days ago, we had a pre-birthday party for you. And I think that was one of the images we missed when they assembled your birthday card for you was the image of Andrew with the Box Brownie around his neck. Anyway, it's Mr. Tuck's birthday in 2 days' time. You were listening to The Stack here in London. We're back in a moment.
J.Crew's designers are constantly pushing boundaries with hopes of making the best clothing available today. As head menswear designer Frank Malchin says, every garment J.Crew produces requires attention to detail, meaning the little things are as important as the most obvious.
We don't leave a stone unturned. Like, every detail is important to us. Every component of a garment gets a lot of attention. Different button shapes, everything, like even stitches per inch is important to us, you know. Like, and for an outsider, it might not look like something, but even the stitch color is important. Like, all those little things people sometimes take for granted, and people maybe don't realize that there's a thought process behind that as well.
J.Crew.
And welcome back to The Stack here on Monocle 24, where I am joined by, and oh, I'm Tyler Brule, by the way, in case you didn't know. I'm joined by Poppy Shibamoto, our director of photography, Richard Spencer Powell, our creative director, and Andrew Tuck. And we are having a bit of a, oh, the cider's just come in. It's nice, isn't it? It's not cider, actually. It's a glühwein. It's a glug. I was very excited just hearing that promo a second ago, though, for Samaritz. I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
I'm going to be there with you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, you're going down to the country for a little bit, and then you're going to be jumping up to the mountains. And Poppy, Rich, you're welcome to come.
When are you guys there from?
We are going to be there. Is this a setup so we can promote this event again? It's I'm there from the 26th to the 1st. then I'm heading to Thailand. Rich, where are you going to be?
I'm going to be home with a mountain of presents that need wrapping, then unwrapping, then assembling, and then reassembling every evening when they're kind of duly broken.
Hurled against the wall.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's just for your wife, is it?
On the topic of presents, we managed to get a microphone to do a little rove around the office upstairs. On the topic of what people would like to receive, if it was going to be in the form of subscriptions for 2013, here's what our colleagues had to say.
I'm Santiago Tarditi, and I'm the editor of the edit section. I would love to get a subscription to Serial magazine, a new magazine about food and travel. Very well curated, very beautiful paper, and a nice format. And I just got the first issue as a sample. And after reading it, I think I will definitely get that subscription.
I'm Carrie. I'm the senior sales executive. And for Christmas, as a subscription, I would get Appartamento, because it just makes me feel nice and cozy, and there's always something to read.
My name's Adam Thompson. I'm a copywriter for Wink Creative. My subscription this year is for Private Eye for its satirical take on current affairs. I read it because the kind of the broad overview that it gives of both kind of UK politics, and also it has good focus on the ad industry and publishing industry, which I'm very interested in.
I'm Louise Banbury, and I'm the chief sub-editor on Monocle magazine. And the magazine that I've chosen for my annual subscription is something called We Are Here, which is a new publication. And the first issue is all about Dubai, and I like that it just sort of takes one destination and just focuses on that. And it's really beautiful looking, really sort of high quality paper and really clear typography. It's just a nice thing.
My name is Barrett Austin. I'm an associate editor at Monocle. This Christmas, I am asking for a subscription to the World of Interiors magazine. They have a great focus on quality photography, and the stories and interiors that they show, I think, are truly compelling. So that's what I'm looking forward to this year.
Ali John, producer of Monocle 24, Bloomberg Business Week. I like it because it does different stories, stories that you wouldn't have even heard of in the business sphere, but shed a new light on different corners of the business community. It's very important for us at Monocle 24.
That's our Ala John speaking breathy sound bites. Do you agree with all of those, Andrew?
No.
Do you want all those? No.
No.
You don't want Serial magazine, do you?
I don't want Serial magazine. And actually, one thing I would raise is, for me, there is still a gap on the newsstand for really the perfect interiors homes magazine. Yeah, I like Apartmento and I really respect what they do and I think it's clever. But I don't want to live in a kind of an apartment that looks like a student flat and I don't want too many potted plants on my windowsills. Yeah, I kind of like world interiors, but I don't want to live in a crumbling old palace. And I think that in that bit in between, what is there? There's Spanish AD, which I think is amazing. And in fact, that would probably be my subscription. That's the one magazine that I do go out of my way to find.
You want to live in a modernist finca, is basically.
Yeah, but do you know...
Modernist finca in Ibiza, don't you? The soundtrack thumping in the background. That's what he's saying, Rich.
What I like about it is that it's homes you kind of feel inspired by. You think there's stuff you could steal for your own way of living. And it's not about eccentricity and kind of, some extreme version of the world. And it's much cozier than all the other versions, the AD US version. I don't care how the big stars live in Hollywood. That's not, what I'm intrigued about looking through the pages. But I really think there's a gap in there for a really great homes magazine. I buy tons of them. Casa Brutus, love. But, again, I think a European homes magazine that's not a Spanish AD. I think there's a real gap for that in the market.
Would you agree, Rich?
I would, yeah, because then there's a sort of a little bit of middle ground in the kind of El Decor kind of mags. And then obviously you go below that into the sort of living et ceteras of the sort of UK news market. But I don't really like mags that give me too many tips. When you've got 60 pages of ways to paint your radiators different, beiges.
You've already sorted that out, though.
Exactly. How often do you paint them? So I think they often, it's just a bit too much fluff in those. So, yeah, I agree. I think a decent interiors mag, intelligent one, could plug a gap. So.
I mean, and there is news. I'm not sure if it's been confirmed yet or not. I mean, I know that we had the editor of Paris Match on recently. He was talking about Condé Nast is going to be bringing out a French version of Vanity Fair, not making the mistake like they did in Germany of doing it weekly, but it'll be, a monthly. But there is, I guess, much discussion. Probably some of you even had a phone call from, Condé Nast, because I've heard they do want to launch Architectural Digest here as well, which could be interesting. I mean, I think that could, if they do it right and don't make it, too House of Strange, it could actually probably do quite well.
And it's expensive shooting interiors. And what's interesting is Spanish AD, one of the things that makes it great is actually there's probably like 8 properties in each issue, whereas actually many other magazines they try and get with like 3 or 4, and then they try and fill it all with pictures of scented candles from the few brands that we know, and those things. Then suddenly you're right; it's just tips and nibbits, and you don't actually see any interiors in interiors magazines.
But sometimes tips are good though if it's not interior magazine, like Martha Stewart. I love it. That's what I want for my subscription next year.
You already got your Christmas present. why don't we start with what everyone's got things around the table, and I'm going to put up my hand first because I just on that front, it's interesting, what you want from an interiors magazine, and one of the ones that I chose, in part just because it transports you somewhere every issue, which is Sumu magazine from Japan. It's a quarterly. It has a very, very specific style. They have a very deliberate view of the world. It's a little bit Lojas. It's a little bit returning to the earth. It's very much about community. But what I like about it, and I think you raise a very good point, it's, part of it, it can be sort of a little bit scruffy or scruffiest things can ever get in Japan. But it's always about wood structures. There is an element of sustainability, but without being, again, heavy-handed or overly hippy-dippy about it. And this is, I just love this family. They just built this outdoor kitchen with these wood ovens, and there's just something about that which is so delightful. And this is a magazine that transports you. I mean, part of it is fantasy. I know that I'm never going to have an outdoor kitchen like that, or would probably have much use for it. But it really takes you somewhere. And I don't know if that's maybe partly what you're referencing, Andrew, is that when you say okay, I don't want to see celebrity apartments. Apartmento is maybe just not aspirational enough for you.
Yeah, I think so, and also that sense of journey. So there's another sector that I think is woeful, is like travel magazines. You know, we have in the UK, the only one really on the newsstand that really matters is, I guess, the Condé Nast Traveller. But actually, when we were in Japan, it was really interesting. We went to a meeting with a fashion brand, Beams, and they, off their own back, had produced a little guide to Okinawa. Mm. Do you know what? That's probably the most beautiful travel publication I've seen all year.
Yeah.
And that's a fashion brand commissioning a photographer and a writer to go and do something. Now, how come none of the kind of big magazines that we think of could pull something off so beautiful, so unusual, so, you know, the paper stock, the way they thought about it? And that I think that's another challenge for actually the newsstand, is that people who are not on the newsstand are often doing more interesting things than the people who are.
Mm. Rich, what do you think is going on in the Japanese market? I mean, Poppy, you might know more. But I think, you know, Andrew, you raise a good point about the Beams Okinawa book. There's something incredibly handmade about it. You feel that this is a team, you know, however big or small, but I think quite small, but they just spent a lot of time researching it. And I always come back to that sense of humanity. There's a humanity going on in Japanese photography and magazines right now, format, paper, layout, which is just, yeah, it's incredibly, I mean, it is aspirational in the sense that it's not aspirational. It's very humble.
Yeah, it's true. I think having just come back from a trip with you in Japan, I think the thing that the magazines seem to do very well is they kind of encapsulate the spirit of Japan in a way that the British market doesn't perhaps encapsulate all of Britain. But if you pick up a Japanese men's fashion magazine, and I've bought one in here, the latest issue of Popeye, it is so dense. There is so much to buy. There is so much to look at. There is so much to learn about. It's crafted. It's beautiful. It makes you want to change your wardrobe. It's inspirational. It kind of makes you, I mean, in this instance of Popeye, it teaches you about food as a how to build your own shed thing. It's just brilliant.
Look at Spencer Powell family. Rich is not going to be going in. I see a family project coming on.
It was already on the back burner. Now it's at the forefront, I think. But it's just, it fills you, yeah, it kind of wants to make you break your, you know, stop your pension payment and just get out there and buy more bits. It makes you want to kind of go and do things.
Don't do that, Rich.
And it's they're just brilliant. And I only can assume that it's just pure effort that they managed to get these things looking the way they do.
Poppy, where does that come from, though? That sense of density. And I think also mixing, you know, that element which feels very crafty. There's one element just before we went on air. I mean, Rich, I think you summed it up and said, you know, it's just so bloody good, this issue of Popeye. It's a January issue that you're talking about. What does the cover line say? I can't read it across the table. It's
this is where city boys live. And that's not city boys as in, you know, bankers from the 80s. It's well-groomed, nice chaps in, very cozy apartments in New York. But again, it's not like any vision of New York you've seen.
And it's not an apartmento territory either, which is interesting as well. But Poppy, what's going on, do you think?
With the Popeye, is when it launched this year, it was really funny. I met this illustrator who used to work when he was like in his 20s or 30s and was reading Popeye as, you know, in the right contemporary generation. And then now he's working for them again and doing these classy, like, crayon illustrations. And it's like this kind of like coming back. And then now the Popeye is going to have people reading in 20s to 30s and then to 50s as well. And then that sort of like, I don't know, it's, they care a lot. I think that's all one thing.
But what about from a graphic design point of view? This, Rich talks about this density that's on the pages. And where does that come from? Is it Japanese consumer culture? Is it?
Yeah, but when I was living in Japan, I never thought that was dense. I thought that was normal.
Mm.
So coming here is different. But I thought that was quite normal to start with. So
I think that the two interesting things as an outsider when you look at those magazines is, you know, one, the thoroughness with which they do things. You know, I know somebody who lives here in London who was shot for a Japanese magazine and couldn't believe what it was like having a Japanese photography team in his house for a day, because they literally took every pair of shoes out of his wardrobe. He's a fashion designer, but they took every pair of shoes out of his wardrobe. They shot every pair of shoes. They wanted to know where all of his socks were made. They detailed and catalogued his house and his life in a way that no one would even begin to think of if they were here. And then the other interesting thing is that when it got on page, it looked amazing. And that's because the printing in Japan is better than it is in Europe. If we'd run all those pictures in an average magazine here in Europe, they would have looked shocking at that size. So there's a cultural thing, that kind of desire to really understand and know and document, and which I think is lacking here in Europe and unwisely lacking. And then I think that just that belief in quality, don't you think, Rich?
I agree. And I think there's something else here, which I haven't discussed, is the storytelling, the way they like to tell the story. You're right, they go into every bit of detail, they show every shoe. And it's not because they're scared of editing. I just think it's a very humble approach. They just want to make sure they show everything. And if you look at this men's magazine, Popeye, yes, it's a fashion magazine, but it doesn't make you feel untrendy. It's a men's magazine, yet there's stories with families in there, you know, guys with a wife and two kids that are building sheds. You know, you would never get that in a fashion magazine from Europe. You would never get that in a men's...
Do they live in Blackheath?
They might do soon. or there might be one in Blackheath soon. But you just wouldn't get that in a title. And I think that's the sort of inspirational part. And that's there's a sweetness to it always. Mm.
We are going to go away for a very short break. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24.
The designers at J. Crew are constantly experimenting with new styles, but it's their staples that they're most proud of. As head menswear designer Frank Mauchens explains, J. Crew's unique approach to tailored clothing led to the now iconic Ludlow suit, recognized for its superior construction and smart bespoke details.
I love it when people start to recognize garments by the way they are cut. It gives it its own personality, and I think that's what we're looking for. And for instance, the Ludlow jacket has a specific narrow lapel. It's narrow, but not too narrow. It has a really nice soft shoulder. It has a shoulder pad in it, but just ever so subtly. And I think the Ludlow jacket is so great. I think there's about 200 steps it takes to make a Ludlow jacket. People maybe sometimes don't realize what it takes to come to this kind of product.
J. Crew.
Before you set off on your travels this winter season, don't forget to pick up your issue of Monocle's winter newspaper, Monocle Alpino. We get cold weather combat training from Japan's elite snow patrols. We look at how Iceland has picked itself up and dusted itself off after a nasty wipeout. And we find the comfortable alpine retreats that will have you packing your bags and heading for the hills. Plus, we look at winter warming fashion ideas with all of the trimmings, including Bavarian Lederhosen. That's all in the current issue of Monocle Alpino. Prost und zum Wohl!
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24, a very special Christmassy edition of the program, as some of us start to head off to, of course, higher altitudes, and some of us head off just to build sheds in southeast London.
Depends if I get the right Black & Decker for Christmas.
Yeah, well, we can probably sort that out. Poppy, you were looking at Ginza. Rich, what do you have there? What do you...
Popeye is my choice, I think. This year, more than any, I think I've focused on Japanese fashion magazines. We tried to shake up our style directory, and we will be doing that again in 2013. But it's just...
Adding a second one as well.
Adding a second one, true, yeah. A little extra in the mix. But yeah, it's just the complete package. And outside of that, more sort of towards home front, I thought The Gentlewoman was very good this year.
Do you think the Angela Lansbury was because of that? Was that sort of the breakthrough cover almost?
I think the cover was fantastic. I think previously the Christy Turlington story was good. The Yasmin Le Bon story was good. And we've just talked about density. And yes, density is amazing. But I also like a nice full bleed glossy image. And I think they do that very well with extreme sensitivity. Again, it's not something that makes you feel like you've seen something too trashy. It's just pure elegance. And I think they do that better than anyone right now. So... I think they've done a good job this year.
If you had to pick up one, we'll come back to the runners-up, but if you had to pick up a standout title for you this year, Andrew?
I'm going to pick something a little bit more mainstream. I'm going to pick New York Magazine. What I like about New York Magazine is they can take any story and make it their own. I think they're playful with the way they do things. I think they have a way of doing infographics, which is sublime. I think they... do covers that represent their city and tell a story of their city in one snapshot. I think their best cover of the year undoubtedly was the image of Manhattan with the lights all off below, I think, 23rd Street, where the power cut hit after Hurricane Sandy. It was an image that told the whole story of that event in one snapshot. And the fact that they do that week in, week out, I think is pretty amazing. And I don't think that when you, and it's still an extraordinary thing that when you look at London, we've seen that you can only be called, you know, I used to work there for several years, we can only call it the demise of Time Out in this market. It's a free sheet, it looks rubbish. And I am pained to say that as somebody who was so invested in that brand. Why isn't there a city magazine here? Everything that here you get pushed through your door seems to be from an estate agent, and on the newsstand, there's nothing that represents this city. I think that's a shining example of really the best city magazine there is going, I think.
And why is it? Because people have tried it. We know that you need deep pockets, and indeed, I think, you know, some people would say, you know, why isn't there sort of the New Yorker with a bit of Spectator, with a bit of New York? Why has London, actually one could argue, why has no other English language city managed to pull off this type of magazine? Because it's not just the economics that go with New York. Yes, there are a lot of, you know, big brands that can support advertising, etc. But do you think there are other forces at play?
I think it's to do some odd things. I think it's to do with the fact that, you know, the UK is smaller, and so actually all of the national papers tend to have London sections and cover London and perhaps do better reporting than some of the magazines that are here. And I think that some of them have struggled to think what their purpose are. You know, are we listings magazines? Well, listings have all gone to the net. And in fact, the New York has always done that very carefully. But I think that there's an extraordinary thing about New York, which is I think that people in New York still read. You know, that's where you have the New Yorker, you have New York Magazine. And it was funny, Poppy made a passing comment there, which I think is actually a really important thing for the whole of this industry. Poppy said, you know, I will sit and read this magazine over Christmas. Now, I'm as guilty as many other people. There are some magazines that I buy, and I will probably buy every month, and I know I'll never read a word in them.
Mm.
I buy them only because I like the imagery, I like what they tell visually. And I think that's the bit that publishers don't understand when they migrate to iPad, because when you buy a magazine on iPad, you immediately feel guilty if you haven't read it, and the pleasure of flicking is gone. And there are lots of titles that unfortunately editors have to face up to. You mentioned El Deco here in the UK. Now, there's a title I do often buy when I'm at the supermarket throwing a few magazines for the weekend. I don't think I've ever read a word in it, but I do look at the images. And I think that that's the problem. You shove that on an iPad, why would I ever buy it? That's the little bit that all the editors imagined everyone is reading every word. All the publishers don't understand this kind of this way that we consume. So I think that's the other funny thing. But yet you go back to New York, and I think there's still people who will read 5,000 words.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about the Hurricane Sandy cover, but there are issues that come out. I mean, they had one on sex, and I forget the name of, what is it when it's three people are in a partnership?
There was a ménage à trois.
It's not a ménage à trois. There was a special word.
A lot of fun.
No, but I forget what.
Another Friday night.
No, it was one of these sort of, you know, invented American terms. But it was just a great piece of reportage about someone who's running a male porn business, I think out on Long Island somewhere, and his partner and this other partner, and just you became wrapped up in the story of their lifestyle, and then the stories of all of these other people's sex lives in New York, and it took, this was real journalism. There was a commitment of time. They had, you know, deployed a very good writer to do the story. There was, you know, decent portraiture, and I think part of it is just, you know, we come back to this word again and again. But it, you know, it was truly, you know, crafting everything that went on page, and that was, you know, the photo editors, the art director, the commissioning editors, the subs, everyone working in tandem, which is great.
I think when you talked about that New Yorker cover, is.
Don't say it was photoshopped, Richard.
I'm not going to say that, but I think the cornerstone for the success of that magazine is journalism. Good old-fashioned journalism. And this year we have had a London title launch in, is it called Town?
That's right.
Its second issue is on newsstand. The first issue, I think, had the model Yaketa Wheeler in a sort of 60s-esque, you know, nice woolen button-down coat. I think the next issue is just a pair of shoes. So there's two fashion covers, both a bit retro. And you just think, I mean, you talk about lack of investment, Tyler. I just think that's complete lack of investment in terms of ideas, journalism, and funding. You know, just the best you can say about London is let's hark back to the 60s and Twiggy. I mean, it's just, it's so weak. I mean, why not put a London bus on
there? Yeah, and I think oddly they do have a good team behind it, but you're right. I think there's a slight sense that when you look at it, it's a magazine almost for outsiders. I think I don't know if they're pitching it at the kind of the
oligarchs'
wives.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And it feels a little bit like this is the London you kind of wish existed rather than the London that really does exist.
I want to, Poppy, what do you... Are you looking at Ginza again? You already drifted off into Christmas already, haven't you?
Yeah,
over there. And the point that they make about, you know, also fashion as well. And I think it's interesting that Japanese magazines manage to do fashion, and I think Rich also, you know, jump in here as well, but you know, it's prescriptive. They give you all of the elements, but I'm not sure how they also manage to do without making you feel bad or feeling like this is an, you know, okay, you're supposed to have this impulse to go and buy. And I'm not sure what it is. Do you think it's, you know, is it the approach to photography that maybe it's not so epic, but yet there's some thought into, because what you don't really see is just the normal cutouts. Mm-hmm. I think that certainly pepper the pages of the Grazias and everything else.
I think there's some elements that is sort of like, it's so everyday, the setup of a fashion shoot. Or seeing someone's wardrobe or shoe cupboard that feels like you're supposed to have them. It feels like it's not something special and expensive. It's supposed to be something you should get next day. I think that's one element. It's the fashion show is sometimes about going in a normal street or, you know, nothing special. It's nothing sort of removed from everyday life. So that, I think, really helps. And it has an element of, like, creating your wardrobe rather than buying this and buying that, but you might not be able to wear together. So it's wearable aspects of fashion show, I think, is awesome.
You've got two copies of our very own magazine in front of you as well. So it's good to see that they've also made it to your top reads of the year. What did you want to highlight?
This, I like the illustration. This is issue 55. When we did the illustration of it, 50 things, and I had 50 things.
And this
we
is working with our Satoshi.
Exactly, and then has hand-drawn, hand-painted illustration. And that's something we like about what, you know, Japanese magazines also do well.
Yeah.
So everything hand-drawn.
Well, they also do something else well, I think, as Rich and well, you can all attest to as well, is there's actually a book to be done after our Christmas party we had in Tokyo, Japanese illustrator's own personal style.
Yeah, they have got their own personal style and bags of it. We haven't got the issue here, but our current issue on Newsstand 59 features illustrations by
Akira.
Yeah, and he himself has appeared in, I don't know if it's Brutus or Popeye or Hanako for Men's, but as one of the most stylish men in town.
Absolutely.
You know, and he turns up and he's kind of 6 foot and bow-tied and as dapper as anything. Unassuming, charming, lovely, you know, just what you'd expect. And it's wonderful sort of to see these characters behind all these wonderful, charming illustrations.
I actually thought it would have been, and maybe Poppy, it's worth doing next year. You wouldn't even have to go and set up a backdrop, but I thought the Tokyo Christmas party and again
snapshot.
yeah I think just to be able to go and do like a Polaroid story there as well. And remember you when we were walking out and going to the restaurant afterwards, just sort of remarking on just the amazing cast of individuals.
And I think that's interesting for the magazine industry in Japan when they're selling magazines. What's interesting, there is a generation of men and women, but certainly a generation of men who actually are very interested in style and design and good suits all the way through their lives. It's not, fashion isn't seen as something you give up when you're 30 and you have a baby, Rich. And I was joking. Rich sends palace very well dressed. But it is something that's with you for life. And that's amazing. You meet these guys who are 60 or even 70 in Japan,
exactly.
And they look absolutely amazing. And that was the crowd that was, you know, everyone from the 20-year-old to the 60-year-old looked sharp.
When we come back in a moment, a little bit of a Christmas tale. And we are almost at the end of this Christmas edition of The Stack. But just before that, we thought we would go back to one of the topics that's certainly dominated our discussions on The Stack over the past few months. We picked up on it at the beginning of the program as well, which is also just the generally sad state of the newsstand, particularly in our home market here in the UK. On this weekend, before Christmas, we asked our news editor, Tom Edwards, to conjure up what his ideal newsstand and news world would be in his most vivid dreams.
"'Twas the night before deadline when all through Midori House not an editor was stirring, not an art director's mouse. The pages were hung on the wall with great care in hopes they'd be printed on paper quite rare. The researchers were nestled a safe distance from the eds while visions of the March issue danced in their heads. While out on the street there was digital chatter, they said cheers to quality and making future issues fatter. If the magazine market looked like a car crash, they decided to push forward with polish and dash. Magazines, in the shadow of a tablet screen's glow, were losing their lustre and disappearing like the snow, when, what to our disbelieving eyes should appear, but a wave of new titles, full of vigour and cheer. Just when it looked like gone was the flick, here were new magazines, juicy and thick. More niche than a focus group could ever hatch. Suddenly there were titles to cover every patch. Catering to chancers and divas alike, our favourites have gathered round this very mic. Anorak, Gentlewomen, and Little White Lies, they vary in content and especially size. I'm trying to find titles that rhyme with Comet and Cupid, but perhaps it's easier to say, Prince far from dead, stupid. So back to this story about commerce and logistics. The newsstand would be healthier if governed less by statistics. In kiosks and bookstores, from London to Seattle, fighting through chocolate bars is now half the battle. I don't want a Fanta, Smarties or a Coke. I'd like a bundle of magazines, please, so stop with this joke. Periodicals should be sold in places orderly, not smelly, that stimulate the mind and gently warm the belly. As we look across the years, there's nothing to dread, save for shrinking ambition and those thick in the head. So fill stockings with subscriptions and titles obscure, and remember that tactile is part of the lure. Before I sign off, I'll leave you with this. Merry Christmas to all. The Stack's a show not to miss."
And that was our Tom Edwards with his own version of The Night Before Christmas. I have to say I wrote it though, but I thought it sounded better with a British accent. Do you like that, Andrew?
I knew you'd take credit for that because it's too good. It's too good to give
away. To get it from Tom Edwards.
No, you can't let him have that.
No, absolutely not. Guys, before we go, Andrew, I'll go back to you. I've got a couple of other magazines that I want to talk about very quickly before we go. But you picked out New York partly because of just, and I think it was Rich was highlighting as well, just great journalism, an all-round good magazine. Two or three other things that stand out for you? I mean, you just, you know, as you're also heading off for the holidays, things you would want, you know, to have with you. And I think for both reasons. I mean, ones you want to read and ones you're also just happy to flick through because it's a great physical experience.
Well, I mentioned Spanish AD. And actually, when we were with you in Japan and we went to Tsutaya, I brought back the last couple of issues of Casa Brutus. And I found myself doing something which I don't think I've done for a very, very long time. Is which I didn't look at the whole magazine in one go.
Oh, that's a good thing.
I was really determined to kind of save some of it. And that I don't think I've done that for so long. It was so good. And the interiors were so interesting that I kind of put it down. I think I was on the plane on the way back with Rich. And I thought, no, I'm not going to look at this. I'm going to save this for a very good moment on the sofa. And I would also pick up with what Al had said about Bloomberg Business Week. I think their business reporting is really interesting. And there's a story that both you and me read earlier this year, which is also just, you know, the kind of business reporting that they can do. They followed a guy, a straight guy, who had left banking. His time was up. They didn't have a job for him anymore. And he'd opened a gay nightclub. And he had employed loads of his friends from the world of banking. Mm-hmm. And they were having the time of their life.
Yeah.
And it was just such...
Was he straight, though? That's what I wondered. Well, no, I mean, seriously, but anyway, we can discuss that another time. But
yeah, he's straight now.
Yeah, is he that? Thank you, Poppy.
He was in the story.
Yeah.
And I just thought, yeah, what other business magazine would do that story?
Great piece of journalism. Yeah. Rich?
It's one thing that we talked about on The Stack when I was here with you and Mario Garcia, which I've been keeping an eye on, which is the magazine Cyclist. And I noticed they're into their third issue now. And I kind of, as it's the time of year to kind of be well wishing, I wish them well. And I hope that sticks, that magazine, because I think it's quite well produce. And I think off the back of the Olympics, if that's what they're kind of riding on, no pun intended,
yeah.
I hope that, that continues. They continue to do a good job. And then if they do, maybe we'll get a nice running title on the newsstand as well.
Which would be good. And on that note, a good segue, this is, I think to me, is one of the outstanding launches of the year, which is Corner Magazine. It's, you know, it is a magazine. You know, some might question their financing model. It's clearly, it's a runner's magazine. The first issue launched in April, and it's just called Corner, a journal of runner's lifestyle, life with running, West Coast Report. Why do you run? To lose weight, to get healthy. Running gives you more than that. It is a way of life. The runners in the U.S. West Coast embody the philosophy of runner's lifestyle. And it's just, and there is this, you know, again, it's one of these things you think, okay, I want to look like these people. I may or may not want to live in San Francisco or Portland, wherever they're doing this. But it's incredibly well done. As you go through, you'll see also very, very clearly underwritten by Nike as well. But that's one that really stands out. Just before we go, I thought when we covered the Germans, I thought just the confidence of the Germans, that wonderful cover with it, the Jesus-like looking character with a bit of like...
sausage.
Yeah.
Bratwurst.
Yeah, with a bit of peekaboo Weisswurst on the cover as well. It's great. That's another talk. I hope they do well. We're going to be going to broadcasting from Berlin in the coming months as well. I know exactly what you're saying about... Apartmento, Andrew, but I have to. I'm glad it's around.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love what it does. I'm just saying.
I mean, look at this. Like more peekaboo. So this peekaboo banana coming out. Add for the standard. This is a banana peeking out from inside a wardrobe. But yeah, it's again. It's a different thing. I like Apartmento journalistically and as sort of as a physical piece. But I never venture in and feel that these are apartments that I want to live in. I never feel that you're right that you get any design tips from it. Yet the title, which is underneath, just Spanish AD for me is it. When I think about glossy magazines in this market, in the European market, that is, you can't beat it. And then Gourmet Traveler. There's all of these. Yeah, we talk about Kinfolk and Gather Journal and everything. I still like a good glossy commercial food magazine. Also, where I know that maybe there was some investment that everyone checked, rechecked, and checked the recipes again. And I think that from Australia, it's also one that makes you want to get on the plane now and then. Yes.
Yes, and we've lamented in the past the kind of the wobble for Australian publishing, but it's great to see that there are still some of these really stalwart titles that come out of Australia.
Absolutely, Poppy. Sorry, were you going to say something? No, no, you're just chilly. I think you want to get out of this.
I'm just the mulled wine.
We're going to have to leave it there. Poppy Shimamoto, our photo director. Richard Spencer Powell, our creative director. Andrew Tuck, our editor. Very, very Merry Christmas, everyone. I think this is at least of this broadcast. That's it for now. We're going to be back next week with a best of. And then I think, Andrew, we might be almost co-anchoring the stack because we're going to be coming from Samaritz with a bit of a look over the mountain peaks. Hopefully you will recovered from sledding by that point.
There may be a bit of an odd cowbell in the next session of the stack.
Yeah. Today's program was produced by Don Trump. Also, Don Trump, as we're rather leanly staffed as the days to Christmas draw closer, was also our studio manager today. If you have any thoughts or comments for the program, do drop us a note at info@monocle.com. But as I said, next week, we are back with our look back on 2012 and certainly the last 4 months of this program. Have a great Christmas. Goodbye.